this is podcast don't know what, but it's such an important topic we're going to talk about that I thought we'd just make sure we cover it all, and we're going to do this in the Dirt Shed Show and hit the highlights, but let's get into the details. So I've got a couple of experts. Got Doddy from Tech.
How you doing?
And Sandy Plenty from the Trailhead.
Good to see you, boys.
And you, mate. I guess you've been doing a little bit of digging for us as well on this topic.
Been undercover.
Undercover. And there's some things we can say and some things we can't. So give me a nod when we're getting near areas you're like, shut up, Martin, we're not talking about that bit.
I'll give you the nod, or I'll give you the old sort of...
Yeah, okay. So what we're talking about, we're going to do a Dirt Shed Show where the topic title is the bike industry broken? And when I started looking at this, I thought, oh, that sounds like a fun title. And then I watched someone else's podcast and I watched another video. And then I came in and spoke to Doddy and I went, I think it might be. So, Sandy, start us off to overview. What has happened? What has happened? But just overview, like what is the tricky situation at the moment for the bike industry in general?
Okay, well, I guess I'm seeing it from the, well, I call it the front line. You know, I'm the last part of the chain. So with the bike shop, the bike's already been made, shipped to a brand, shipped to a distributor, shipped to me. So we're the very end of the puzzle, if you like. In 2019, things were tough, certainly for us at the Trailhead. You know, it was pretty quiet. And if I'm really honest, I was questioning the effort to reward.
Yeah.
Because ultimately we can all say, oh, we're doing this for the love, but we're all just trying to pay the mortgage, aren't we?
Yeah, of course.
So that was getting increasingly harder. And then obviously COVID came, which for many, many reasons is terrible and turned everyone's lives upside down. But it had an opposite effect on the bike industry, as we all know. Bikes... they didn't just sell through, they sold out. You know, I knew it was going crazy when I sold a 22-inch 2016 Cube to someone 5'8", and I told him he couldn't have it because it wasn't the right size, and he insisted he was having it. So I thought, right, it's gone bonkers.
That's supply and demand for you there.
That is, isn't it?
So we sold everything. And us, the Trailhead, and I think... most other people in the chain, brands, distributors, vendors, were probably thinking, okay, crikey, this is, you know, this is our break. We're not a license to print money, but we can just make bikes and they're going to sell. And so as a shop, we ordered bikes. We couldn't get them in fast enough. They kept selling through. And we're in 21. We're still ordering bikes. I was trying to be careful. If I'm really honest, I was thinking this can't last forever. But even I was getting sucked into this. Maybe it will. Maybe it will keep trickling on. And then we're in a point where we're in 22 and I'm doing something I don't want to ever do is ring up and go, oh, you know, there's six e-bikes in that one size, colour, model. I'm going to just make that into two. You know, and that trend was happening throughout the world, I can imagine. So orders are getting cancelled. And brands aren't liking that, but brands are also starting to perhaps cancel their orders with the vendors. Maybe the vendors aren't liking that, obviously.
Yeah.
And then that's the start of the storm brewing, in my opinion.
And so why? What happened on the ground in 22 that's made it? Is it like a perfect storm of just things coming together with wars in Ukraine? And
yeah, I think the war in Ukraine is definitely a huge factor, because, you know, that's triggered cost of living prices going up, and the scaremongering in the media, you know, it's I believe that's hugely responsible for people being understandably very careful with their money. But you know, in when COVID was at its peak, and you know, we were in various lockdowns, people weren't working so much. Obviously there was a lot of people that were, you know, hats off to everyone that kept going and had to keep going. But there was furlough, there was other opportunities, people weren't travelling around, so much money was being saved, and it was being spent on leisure. Mm. Everyone's back to work now. People are paying triple for their heating and electric. Mm. And something's got to give.
It's frightening, isn't it? It's a frightening situation. So I noticed it. The reason I sort of was... The alert for me was I put a bike on the used market last year. It's a 2016 bike. 27.5-inch wheel, so it hasn't got much going for it already. But it's a really decent bike.
Yeah.
You know, I've got it because I particularly thought it was a nice bike and I bought it for my son. And he wasn't riding it much and I thought, oh, I could do with the space in the garage. I'll put that on eBay. And literally no one wanted it. And I put it on. I didn't care about the price much.
Yeah.
And I just was amazed that no one even looked, just was not.
No bites.
And I thought, wow, I can't sell it. No. I can't get rid of it. That's felt strange.
Yeah.
And then I looked at the used bike market a bit and there are unbelievable deals.
Yeah.
Like crazy good bikes for, you know, £1,000 off. Or everywhere.
Yeah.
And they're not
in almost new condition as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because people have bought them in 19, 20.
And they're trying to shift them quick.
They're not riding them because they're back at work. And they're not selling.
That's largely down to, which we'll get on to hopefully in a bit, but where we are right now in 2023 is everyone's warehouses are full. Everyone has got more bikes than they're comfortable with.
Mm.
And we are not a discount shop. We never have been, but even we're having to do some pretty aggressive sales at the moment just to turn the bikes back into cash to pay the bills and keep going. Mm. Now, when you've got £1,000 off of a brand new bike, all that's doing is driving down the second-hand market.
Mm. Yeah.
So in 2020 and 2021, second-hand bikes were crazy. People were paying way over the odds, over the odds. And I think people got used to that. So they were like, right, okay, I'm going to sell my bike, just like you.
Mm.
And you've got a figure in your mind, I'm going to sell that. And no one's interested.
Mm.
And it gets to the point where I just keep it because it's not worth selling.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is it gets to a certain point on a price and you think, well, it's no point, it's just a waste to let it go. And I just thought, as you were saying that, this is probably a very similar situation. I bet this is happening in dogs as well as bikes.
I think that happened, we've seen this before with dogs, yeah.
I think this is probably happening with dogs.
People buying pets for
working at home. Dogs are getting...
I think
it's a really big problem, actually.
Yeah.
Because when you said bikes were being bought overpriced, I bought a dog in lockdown.
Did you?
I was one of those. I've got a lockdown dog. And to say I paid over the money for him, I love him. I absolutely love him.
I don't think you're a lockdown dog buyer. You've always had dogs.
Yes.
You're just a dog lover.
Just for some reason was like, let's get another one because we've just got so much time on our hands. And to say we paid over the price. And if that happened in bicycles, wow, you would have been paying a lot of money for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Quite a neurotic cocker spaniel.
Can we just go back a minute on when you're talking about stock and, you know, having to be aggressive to basically get rid of these bikes? Mm-hmm. It's an interesting point. When I was at Eurobike last year, I won't refer to any brands here, but a handful of brands I spoke to that I knew had 24 product and I was expecting to see it. I was like, where's the stuff? And they're like, we've been asked by all our international distributors to not show 24 product because now there's this huge bottleneck. Disease post-COVID where people couldn't get anything because of supply problems with, I don't know, it might be like an O-ring so the bike couldn't be assembled.
Yes.
So it's stuck in the factory, costing the factory money. Now that's eased. There's the opposite problem that bike shops and distributors have got all the stock now and it's all 23 stock.
And no,
you know, the 24 stuff is ready to go.
I literally don't want to see a 24 bike.
It's scary. I just didn't realise how bad it was.
Go straight to 25.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because when I was chatting to you on the phone about this, the word you said that stuck in my head was circuit breaker.
Mm.
Is what the cycling industry needs is a circuit breaker. And I was thinking, is this a dumb idea, right? Could the brands and the manufacturers not just go, no, these are 25 bikes?
Well, you are
chill
seeing,
for a bit.
Yeah.
You are seeing some brands approach it differently.
Yeah.
You know, brands like YT aren't really doing model year bikes. There'll be like a new bike and it'll be the same frame, for example, and as the new, let's just say, Shimano SLX componentry comes out for 24 rather than 23, it will just be on the bike and there'll be a slight price adjustment.
Right.
But it won't be like this on next model year bike. You're just buying the same bike and a few parts will change with the years.
Are they able to do that because they're direct?
I don't know why they're able to do that, but like it feels like there's a bit of a shift in a few brands
Other brands are doing it, you know, brands that I stock are doing it. And I quite like the... But with all the best will in the world, they can say, right, we're not putting a model year on this bike. But the second... So obviously, a bike brand is the frame. Mm. Maybe some of the other components have got that company name stamped on it. But essentially, the other thing that puts a timeline on a bike is the suspension.
Yeah.
So that also, someone wants 2024 RockShox on their bike, you know, that then puts that bike as a 2024. So
they can
take the year off of the bike, but it's still identifiable by the components that are on it. So right. I think we're in this for, this isn't just going to solve its, you know, it's not going to cure itself in the next 12 months. I think it's going to be 2-3 years of a clogged up system.
Mm. Well,
that's mildly terrifying.
It is terrifying when you know, you guys have been to the trailhead. We're a small shop and we've got lots of stock. We always have. Now we've got so much stock, we've had to take extra storage. Mm. And I know lots of other brands have, just to warehouse the stock.
And do you think would you say your situation's typical? Or would you say it managed it better, worse, you're kind of in the average? What would you say?
If I'm really, really honest, I thought I was ahead of the curve and I thought I was managing it well.
Yeah.
And it's crept up on me. And this sort of last month has been a real eye-opener. You know, some of the bills I've got to pay and, you know, they will get paid ultimately. Mm. But it's scary. It's big numbers.
Mm. Yeah.
And I just want to say that all the brands that we sell, I'm very lucky they've been so supportive.
You said that earlier on, that's
interesting. Yeah, and that's really, it's really nice. And I think they have to be, because this isn't going to last forever. Mountain bikes are going to be ridden for years to come, in the woods, on the road, on the gravel. It's not going away. We just need to solve what's going on now and get back to whatever normality is.
Why was it difficult in 2019 when you said it was like, you know, it was like you were backwards and forwards over, like, is it worth the pain? What was making it hard then? Was that not normal? Was that kind of like, it's just generally hard and now it is super, super difficult?
Yeah, I think in 2019 it was, I don't know whether we were heading towards a recession anyway.
Yeah.
But
I think we were.
Yeah. It felt that way.
Yeah, I think we were.
It felt like it did 10 years ago. Each sale was hard work. Mm. You know, everyone had expectations that were discount based. That's another good point, actually. So when COVID came and then the supply and demand was at its height, you know, there was no discount. People were fighting over bikes almost. Mm. And now we've gone back to, you know, not advertising crazy deals, but someone comes in and they want a bike, they're going to get a deal. And I think if any shop owner was listening to this and they didn't agree with me, I'd be surprised. I think we're all in this together. We've never actually, we all need to pull together every part of the chain.
And I guess we start moving into the bits where it gets a bit tricky to talk about, but I guess there is parts in the chain that have got more power than others, and are they going to wield that power?
Well, the top of the chain.
Yeah.
So you mean factories?
Factories.
The vendors, yeah. I mean, some brands are in a good position where they own the factory outright. They might even be making other people's bikes in that said factory. Mm-hmm. They're in a great position. But if you're a popular brand making something out of carbon fiber and there's six brands under that umbrella and the vendor's saying, well, you've put this order in, so you need to have it. Otherwise, you can find yourself somewhere else to get your bikes made. They have got them over a barrel. Now, I'm not saying that's happening in every vendor, and I'm not saying that's... I'm not generalising, but that is happening.
I wonder what it is that's making them have that approach, if that's what's happening. Is it a case of their commitment to manufacturing, the time it takes to do the tooling and stuff, or is it a case of they might have seen an opportunity because of what's happening?
That's a really good question, Doddy. I think that it would be different from factory to factory. I will put my neck on the line now and say there must be some profiteering / bullying going on, but also put yourself in the shoes of the vendor. You know, you're running a business. Mm. You've been told this many frames are going to be manufactured, and then the brand's saying, nope, we want a third of that. You're going to dig your heels in, aren't you? You're going to be like, well, hang on.
You're going to have to.
I've got staff to do this. I've got... So I can see it from all sides. Mm. I think I mentioned it at the start of this podcast, which is my responsibility in ordering bikes for my brands. You know, that's a serious one, and I got that wrong at times. Mm. I thought I was quite conservative in what I ordered. I know some shops went crazy, then cancelled a lot. Mm. We definitely cancelled some, but we tried to keep as many as we could because we want to keep our long-term relationships with our brands.
Yeah.
So 10 bikes on order, okay, we'll take 4, we'll cancel 6, you know. Some people had 30 on order and they cancelled all 30. You know, we tried to take some bikes, which is why we're overstocked, and why every other bike shop in the country is overstocked as well.
So if the power's at the top, where is the bottom? Because this sounds good for the consumer.
Amazing.
So is it the dealers? Who's gonna pay the price? Who are we gonna lose? Are we gonna lose people? Are we gonna lose brands?
The distributors. The brands will be safe. The distributors, yeah. I think they're going to be at, you know, breaking point. They're taking, because the distributors, depends how your brand's set up, of course, but a typical model where the bike's made, it's the brand then ship it to their distributor in that country. That distributor is, you know, they're like me, they're a customer. They've ordered bikes from the brand, which then they hope they can sell to the shops. It's putting pressure on that part of the link for sure. And you mentioned YT, so they're not having that problem.
Yeah, of course.
And my worry as a bike shop owner that likes the brands I already sell, it might push some of those big, well-respected brands into the more direct sales way, because...
Can we just pick up on that, actually, for myself and Martin, and also a lot of viewers will wonder, like, what the actual difference is and what it means by being able to buy direct and using a distributor model? Because it could be easy to think, why on earth do you need a distributor if you can buy direct? Now, so there's two different things going on.
I think what the distributor does is it means it can sell to a bike shop, and it's guerrilla marketing. We're on the ground, passionate, talking about a certain bike. So we're doing that job for them because we want to sell it. Whereas if you're a direct sales brand, you know, you're relying a lot more on marketing, however that may be. Still marketing in all brands, but yeah. I think you get customer service in the distributor bike shop business model.
When you say customer service, you mean like warranty and...
You can bring the bike back somewhere. You can speak to someone face to face.
Yeah,
I think that's important when I buy stuff in other.
I agree.
Other sports. I'm going to say that I'm a bike shop owner, but some things do work direct.
So predictable.
I know.
but obviously there's a financial difference here that could be kind of key in this story as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So you think that a direct sales company, could be Canyon, could be YT, could be any of those, they probably have the ability to absorb some of that costing that's affecting everything.
Of course they can.
The distributor model, obviously the distributor buys the bikes at a cost and then the dealer buys a different cost from that. And then the consumer buys. There's only one chain, one link in the chain, if that makes sense.
I'm selling a bike that's been sold three times before me, or twice, you know, well, essentially, it's been sold from the vendor to the brand to the distributor, if that's how it works. One of the, you know, our main brand that we sell at Trailhead, German bicycle manufacturer, they do it slightly different, which is a really great way. So they're the brand and they're the distributor. So that works quite well. They've saved a margin. They've saved a slice of the cake. But if you are a customer out there and you listen to this, just go and buy a bike, because you are never going to get bargains like you will this year.
Well, that's about as good a tip as you can ever offer.
And you don't, you know, buy it from wherever. Make sure you're getting some good customer service wherever you do go, but you will get a deal. But don't...
Are you going to be stuck with it, though? Yeah, when's that going to change?
I think people are keeping bikes longer and longer. I think they are. I think e-bikes have got a 2-year shelf life because people are very...
We get two types of... There's two major types of person who's going to buy a bike. Someone's just going to buy a bike and they'll run it till it's dead, basically. They'll replace all the parts as they need, and you get other people that will constantly chip them in for the latest model.
Yeah.
They'll ride it for a minimal amount of time, I know, 6 months to 12 months maybe, put an InvisiFrame kit on it to keep it looking as fresh as possible, get the warrant, get any service work done with receipts,
yeah,
and you sell it as quick as possible. You lose minimal money, but
people do that, but I'm seeing more and more people holding on to bikes, and we quite like that because, you know, keeps the workshop busy.
Yeah,
we've been fixing some bikes, you know, some 2019, say, quite boutique-y bikes, and they've been having sort of £500-700 services, which sounds crazy, but you service the fork, drop a post, and the shock, and put a new drivetrain on, and bang, you're there. But what they've done is they've kept their bike's brand new again, and we're seeing more and more of that, for sure.
Is there any, have you had any knock-on effects? So say you're doing a service on a bike like that, have you had any sort of cost of living ramp up in the price for something like that? Because yesterday my wife went to the shop and did like the weekly shop.
Yeah.
Guess how much it cost. Try and guess how much.
Guessing. It'd be nice to know what your average was before the list.
I would say the average price for, I'd say,
£300.
It was £380.
This is a weekly shop.
A weekly shop.
And how much of that would you say was yours?
What do you mean, like
food that you?
Food. No, very evenly spread. Okay. Very evenly spread.
How much of it was Diet Cokes?
Only one box. A small box as well. Usually it would be about £160.
It's mental.
So is that happening in a bike shop? If I came in for a service, what would be a normal cost of a service? Is that doubled?
We're £40 an hour, and I always say to customers these two things. We can do a lot in an hour.
Yeah.
And remember this, I really want you to come back.
Yeah.
So it's going to be itemised, it's going to be fair. You're going to get a lot of value for your money.
Yeah.
So £40 would be perhaps a couple of brakes, bled, and a gear tune and a gear cable.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so...
That'd take me a day.
To be honest, that sounds really good value to me.
Yeah,
like, I'm driving up to you to do my bike.
You know, we obviously do the opposite here. We try and empower people, if they want to fix stuff themselves, to fix it, or at least understand how it works.
Yeah.
And I know that might not necessarily be liked by bike shops because you want that trade. I actually see bike shop like really good value.
No, we actually encourage people. I mean, don't come asking for this, but on many occasion, I've lent a customer a tool, like just bring that back in 2 hours, and they've gone and taken their own bottom bracket out, and they've come back and bought some biscuits, and they thought, they were nice, they were friendly.
Maybe that's an official offer on this podcast.
Yeah, no, never ask to borrow a tool. Can we cut that out?
Oh, man.
As I was saying, I was thinking,
can't wait to hear someone's going to come wandering in. I heard your podcast on the Global Manpower Network, and your offer sounds fantastic.
I just think customer service driven shops will survive, and it's going to be tough. And
service is always worth paying for.
Yeah,
you spend money, you believe in the shop, you believe in the staff. That's what you're buying into.
I bought a new trails bike the other day for it to
go. Surprise!
And I drove a long way to get it, yeah. Down to BVM. And I just wanted customer service, and I got that. And I left there just buzzing. And I went back and I told the staff, they glazed over when I got back to Trailhead because it was about trials. But I just said, look, they did this, they did this. They made me feel like this. I drove away feeling like this. And it's a huge responsibility selling a bike. It's a big deal. People save, they wait that day when they come to pick it up. It's, well, for me anyway, it's a big deal.
Mm. No, it makes, I think it's one of the biggest parts of it. I've been really lucky whenever I've, because the relationship you have with those people, and you end up having a similar one when you're riding professionally with the brand, you know, because they're talking to you very much like, we want you to do this, and we want, you know, we want you to like the brand because of that, and they're really selling it to the rider. And you build up this relationship, and then everything you go away from that brand, that era of your riding, is that relationship.
Of course,
you know, it's like, and they're the actually the memories of what it's about. I mean, I'm a chatterbox, as you know. So I like, all my love of cycling is what happened around it.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily much to do with, I tried hard when I was on my bike, but all the stuff that's made it worth it is what I did just before it, just afterwards, you know.
What was said.
Yeah.
The laughs.
The giggle of it all.
I hope people see value in that still. And some things are better off bought online. I'm going to say it, you know, I get it. But some things I think you need to go in store for, and the e-bike is one. Mm. If you ever needed customer service, it's with one of those bad boys.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think is going to happen with e-bikes? Like, I've sort of talked about it on the Dirt Shed before, but I think we're going to end up at this middle of the road bike that's neither. And we've got there a lot quicker than I imagined, actually, but we're getting there a lot quicker than I imagined.
I said to Sandy upstairs before we came in here to record this podcast that I'm kind of terrified of the e-bike market.
Yeah.
And if I was in the market to buy an e-bike now, I would have no idea what I'd want to commit to because of the rate of development.
It's like wheel size times a million.
I mean,
it's not that bad, is it?
I'll always bring a conversation back to old stuff, and I'm not going to hear, but it does remind me of maybe around the late 90s when bike design wasn't the best, and it seemed every month there was a new suspension design out and a new disc brake design.
Yes.
And it, you know, just the rate, you can't keep up with that. And what do you do as a consumer when you're buying a bike you think's got the latest kit on it, and then literally later that year there's something that's like substantially different and better available?
What do you do as a bike shop when you've got 30 of them in stock?
Yeah.
And you can literally see before your eyes them just going out of date.
Oh my God.
Luckily, it has settled down a bit. You know, we've got past the 500 watt battery, and I think people are still really happy with, I mean, my e-bikes are 630, and that's great, you know, and then 750, and there's the odd 1,000 out there, but that's a big bike ride to run a 750 out.
Yes.
And I feel that's slowed things down, and that's helped us.
Or a heavy rider.
True story. Or muddy conditions combined with a heavy rider.
Sounds like me. So does that help the situation or not? Do e-bikes help or make it worse?
It's the only thing that's really selling at the moment.
E-bike market's got to be helping your servicing.
It certainly is. It certainly is.
Go through stuff.
And if we go back to the main topic of this discussion, which is, you know, why are we overstocked? What's going on? Is the bike industry broken? It's broken, but it's being, you know, we're hanging over a cliff, and the lifeline is e-bikes.
Right. Okay. That's not how I thought it would. You'd say, actually.
Honestly, is that because a lot of e-bike customers? I'm really generalising now. So some e-bike customers may be in a slightly more fortunate position, and the cost of living isn't affecting them as much. Mm. Everyone's situation is different, but they're the bikes that are continuing to sell, and if I'm really honest, they're keeping us afloat. Mm. Go on, carry on. We sold on Saturday two acoustic bikes, two really nice ones, you know, we almost did a dance. You know, it was like, we've just sold two bikes that aren't e-bikes. You know, it's, and it, 2019, we didn't sell e-bikes.
I'm with you. I'm with you, Dolly. I wouldn't know which e-bike to buy right now. I wouldn't know.
I don't necessarily mean like physically which one to pick. Mm. I mean, I don't know what I'd want to commit to.
Well, that's what I mean. Because if I was buying an e-bike,
I don't
want to
buy this now because
in terms of price be, or
no technology.
Technology.
Yeah.
So do you think the price on e-bikes?
I don't know if they are or not, but I feel like I would be.
Yeah,
that's what I feel. I'd be like, I'd be looking at what all the motor. I'd be looking at it from the motor point of view.
Yeah.
I did a bit of time with Steve last year, and we went to a couple of motor brands, and looking at how hard they're working on things that could make so much difference and be so much better than something that's 2 years old or just I makes mean, it.
How old's the EMBN now?
Young.
5 years old, I think. In that time, you think what's happened.
Yes.
They were the first generation of e-bikes. And now you look at them, that's not very old at all. No. And they look so old and dated in such a short window.
Yeah, just the batteries being external makes them look like dinosaurs.
And tiny, and it felt like a bolt-on kit. It didn't even feel like a... I think it's probably Specialized to thank for the first sort of generation of the bikes that looked like for purpose, but... I know it's getting away from this a bit.
Well, I mean, it's all right. It can go anywhere. I'm not. I mean, I'll keep bringing it back to you know. I'm. You know, I've got a couple more things to ask on that, but we're not. We can go anywhere with it. It's just a conversation. But I.
But that's 5 years.
Yeah.
And what you have now, it's like, what's it going to be like in 3 or 4 years?
Well, that's what I was looking at a Trek CXE the other day at Bike Park Wales, and I was thinking, God, I was talking about maybe that bike would exist like only a year ago, maybe a bit more. Yeah, it was a bit more because they came out. Yeah, so a year and a half ago, I remember saying on the Dirt Shed, there's going to be this bike. And I was thinking, actually, that's kind of what I'd been imagining.
Yeah.
Oh, that was already being ridden somewhere, but it was a prototype or something. What is it there? If I was thinking 5 years down the line, what will it look like?
What are they thinking?
What? Yeah, I'm clearly, my brain is nowhere near where this is going.
No.
And, yeah, I wonder what that does to... Because people who don't ride mountain bikes don't see the difference. That's what I've realised. Yeah. Is they don't look at e-bikes and mountain bikes and go, oh, you're an e-biker, you're a mountain biker, that is an e-bike. They're just like mountain bikes. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So if they come to the sport, they aren't coming to it with this... Oh, I want to ride an acoustic bike, or they don't want to come and ride the best one. And the best one's something I can't really imagine. Like, I actually don't know what it looks like anymore.
I think we're seeing more and more lightweight systems like the Fazua. You know, they've just been bought by a big car company, and I think that's going to get developed, and you're going to see more of the lightweight.
That's
that new
where
transition.
I
we don't sell. Transition, but that new bike is
it's lovely looking bike.
It's a really good looking bike.
Yeah,
but I think I just still want a full fat e-bike.
That's all I've been in mind.
If I'm on an e-bike, I want to be max power.
Definitely. That's where I'm at.
You've got to think of the weight class you're in as well. I'm too heavy to run the light stuff. When no point. Neil loves the light stuff, but he's like a jockey, isn't he? So he's like the optimum person in terms of weight to ride one.
Yeah, he is. He probably does get an awful lot out of
Why
it.
Why are we
though?
Talking about e-bikes so much?
Well, I don't know. A lot of conversations come around to e-bikes.
It's a hot topic.
So, yeah. It's quite interesting that they're the lifeline. So that's good news.
Well, they are for us anyway.
For the dealers and
who's out of interest? Who's buying e-bikes from you? Are they your regular customers or are they new people? There's obviously a new market that's formed in addition to what's there.
Ways they come in. So it could be just someone completely new to mountain biking. Like Martin said, I just want the best bike. And they feel that's an e-bike.
Yeah.
Not even considered a... So they come in. That's great. We're seeing more and more, like, a couple of our team riders, and we've got a cracking little shop team, some really good, you know, I'm going to say they're athletes, really good riders, very fit, fast. They're switching over to E and they're just riding further and they're just giggling at doing 70K rides and getting every descent they can round Eastridge, and they're just loving it. So that's, you're getting those almost I'm seeing more and more of the haters getting turned around. I'm never having any bike. No, no, no. Mm. Oh, okay, maybe. And so we're getting those. But we're doing a lot of leisure stuff as well, which we don't often talk about. So, you know, you're very Dutch-style bikes, round town, canal towpaths. Mm. That market is just so buoyant. You know, the older, you know, man or woman or couple come in, we'd like a couple of e-bikes to go on the motorhome or just to... We live in townhouse, we want to just get around. We've seen so much of that. That's great. Mm.
Yeah, that is good. That is good. Coming back to the crisis. Is it a crisis? Feels like a crisis. It feels way more serious than when I started.
I don't think it's a crisis if everyone just buys a bike.
Yeah. That was...
Quick!
But it is... I don't want to be scaremongering, but there's going to be tough times ahead for everyone in that chain that we spoke about, from the vendor to the bike shop. But it's pretty good for the customer.
So let's get on to that, because this is weird, because we're in a cost of living crisis. I'm paying nearly £350 for my weekly shop. I don't really know how that's sustainable.
Still got your box.
And I would like to look at the receipt. That's what I'm going to say, because I wasn't on this shop, and Alfie and Lisa went and done it, and I want to see what Alfie bought.
It depends what sort of shop it was, isn't it? Because sometimes you've got to do all your tins and that, and all that.
She didn't buy any of the washing stuff. She didn't buy any of the, like, the...
Sauces.
No booze. Nothing. I'm like, gee, when I get back on the drink in February... We're in February, aren't we?
We are.
It's my birthday next week. I'll be back on it. Be £500 bill. Anyway, so cost of living's happening, but weirdly... You can buy a really cheap bike right now.
Yeah.
Like, you can buy a cheap used bike. You can buy a brand new 22 bike that is going to be good.
So what's going to be happening with 23 stock then? Because people, I assume, are going to have to be discounting stuff.
Definitely.
Like, soon.
What we've got to remember is every January, February, the year before stock is sold off cheap. So that's no different to the last 30 years of the bike industry. So it's nothing new. Mm. It's just there's so much stock that those sales are slightly more aggressive. Mm. And
they look more than slightly more aggressive.
Yeah, they're pretty
You sound
on.
Quite diplomatic the way you're saying that.
Yeah.
I think there's some crazy deals out there, and you go on our website and there's some crazy deals on there like there never has been before.
Check out the Trailhead website.
So are you better off then as a punter right now, ignoring the second-hand market and just trying to get a deal
feels
on
like
a brand new
bike? It feels like that's what is happening.
I feel like that's the way I would look at it, to be like, well, I'll pay a little bit more and get the warranty and all that stuff with it. Mm.
Definitely, but there is some still good second-hand bargains out there, and eventually the second-hand market is very different. Yes, we sell some second-hand bikes, but it's essentially people like yourself, Martin. It's people who have attached a value to their beloved second-hand bike. And if they don't adjust their expectation, they're going to keep it, like you have. Or they're just going to keep it, and the price is just going to get so low, they're going to give it away. Mm. So I think in 6 months' time, you're going to see really cheap second-hand bikes when people have gone, actually, I'm going to cut my losses, I'm going to sell it for whatever, I'm going to get that money back in somehow. So right now, to answer your question, I'd buy a new bike, but keep an eye on the second-hand market, because it's going to become even more flooded, I think.
Wow. I thought we were sort of at the max bit on the second-hand bit.
Well, people are going to be going, well, now's the time to buy the bike.
Yeah. So you should buy right now. So whatever's happening, if you're a rider out there, you should, if you want to sell your bike... Let's get to them in a minute. If you want to buy a bike, now is the moment, but buy new, because you're going to get your warranty and you're going to get an amazing deal. Where are the best ones?
Well, I think...
Other than the Trailhead, which is given.
Just go into stores.
Yeah.
Go into stores. But then, you know, if you're a confident mechanic at home and you want to buy a direct bike, then do. You know, you're going to. If I tell you not to, you're still going to. Like, do whatever is right for you. But treat yourself. It's life's gnarly right now. And if you can get yourself a bike, get one because you're going to get bargains. I don't think you're going to see again.
There's worse things to spend a lot of money on than a bike.
Yeah.
I mean, are you going to be buying... the bit I'd be thinking, because I love that sentiment, what you just said. Like, it's gnarly times and this is a great time to get a bike. That's great.
It's therapy.
But are you buying something that's going to depreciate enormously, even though you're buying it at a good deal?
That depends how quick we come out of this fiasco total that we're in. I think once we've... That's when I said 2 to 3 years. I think we're going to be clogged up for a little while. You can't tell me we're not going to be having this same conversation in 12 months' time over 24. I hope we're not. Right. And I hope we're 20% further towards normality.
Mm.
But we're still going to be in a little bit of a pickle. And the circuit breaker, as we keep referring to, needs to happen. And I know some brands are actively doing it. You know, they're ordering, they've managed to cut their orders with their vendor, and we just need a few less bikes for a bit. And
So where did we get to on the what you do if you're going to buy a bike? You buy a bike. Where do you think the best deals are, Doddy? Are they online? Are they at the store? What would you do? I'm imagining this listener now.
I think based on something that Sandy said earlier on, probably in stores.
Mm.
What you see online, that's going to be a fixed price. I feel like you're going to get a similar price in store, but I think you might be able to negotiate. Mm. You might be able to get some kind of additional deal or support or something.
Mm. I think, you can really choose more than ever if you're the consumer. You really can. You know, crack open a beer, get the websites up and really look around and enjoy that. I love buying, I don't know, say it's a camera. I love seeing who's got it at the best price, but then also perhaps going in, if it's a store we can go into. Mm. I love all that. And I think it's something quite magical about buying a bike.
Well, I think buying something that you desire to buy.
And you've said
something
that's
not a pair of socks that you need.
Yeah.
If it's something you actually really want to buy. The experience, I think, is an important thing.
Oh, yeah.
However you get that.
And I'm going to say this as a bike shop owner, you can still get that online. You can ring one of these direct brands and you can get good customer service. I know you can.
Mm.
It depends what you want from it. I can't tell you how to buy a bike. No. Just go and get one wherever you get it from.
Oh, it's just, I had a thought then. Oh, God, it's gone out of my mind. I had a really good thought then. Oh, it's gone. It's one of those ones where I can just feel it going further away as I
jostle around full of fresh air.
Martin, let me ask you a question quickly.
Go on.
So, where would you... How would you go about... So, you've just had your next paycheck. You've got £2,500 to £3,000 sat in your bank. What's your thought process through to buying a bike? What would you do?
I think what I'd do is I'd probably do the bit you just said, because I love that too. I would go online and I've committed that I'm going to spend the money on the bike. I would go online and look at it all, because that's super fun.
It is.
But I would see that if I was going to, but in this, because you phrased the question, I would be using that as a bit of research.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just be engrossing myself in that for a good week or so, just looking. And then I would go into a store, but with that research. So I wouldn't want to talk to the dealer without knowing what I was talking about, because I don't like it when I start talking to someone and I realise they don't know. It does my nut in.
Mm-hmm.
If I go into a car dealership, I'll spot it in a moment. I'll go in and I'll ask them something and they'll answer me and I'll be like, I don't need to talk to you for another moment.
I think I
do not need to listen to another word you say because you don't know what you're selling.
There's nothing worse than the customer knowing more than the person working in the retail.
I find that is quite often the case.
Yeah.
So I know that if you went in somewhere like Trailhead, that wouldn't be the case. So that's what a dealer should be. That's what a dealer's got to be for me. I've got to go in there and go, oh, right, yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
And if I don't get a lot, I need to have a lot of that to really want to spend my money, I think.
But sometimes, if I'm really honest, someone comes in and they'll know more about that very particular SKU, you know, that bike size colour, than I do. I might know a lot generally about it, but I think that's quite nice as well, because that's my opportunity then to sort of empower the customer, like, oh, fair play, you've done your research, this is great, you know, come in, let's get a brew going, let's look at the bike. Mm.
I think what Martin means, though, isn't that. I think he means someone that literally doesn't know anything.
Doesn't know what I'm
saying.
Like,
it's not like, so much I go in there with like a quiz in my head. It's just that I think once you've got to know what you think you're going to.
I want you to sell it to me. Go on. And they don't, and they can't.
You could be a secret shopper.
No, it's not the selling. It's not I want them to sell it to me. It's when I go into a store, if I'm going to go and buy something like a bike, like a car, that's the kind of sort of thing I'd be thinking about in this situation. I will have looked a lot and enjoyed it, and I would have pretty much decided what I wanted. I don't want to really be talked out of what I want.
No.
I will have already decided it, but it's that bit about the experience. I now want it to become like ISCO. I want that van. I'm mentioning cars because I'm doing the van thing at the moment. So I want that van, and I don't want to have some conversation now with someone that makes me think less of the brand, because then I feel silly. You know, and then you start talking to someone. I've had it a couple of times now with a vehicle where I'm just like, I am giving you 50 grand. I ain't giving it to you. You're like, you don't care about what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Like, you don't like it much.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know,
whereas
like, you know, it is the cup of, it's like, let's chat about it. Let's, you know, or you're interested. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. I guess it is. You want them to sell it. I guess, but no, I don't want that. Yeah. I don't want it in a.
Well, think about the opposite way.
I want to let's do it. Let's make the sale.
In a roundabout way, to talk you out of it rather than talk you into it.
This is going to be great. Yeah, 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 and just.
I get it.
Yeah, I want to have that enjoyment, but yeah, I would be going into the store, and I would know what the bikes are selling for, or what similar is selling for.
Clued up.
And I would be knowing what that deal is I want. I wouldn't be going in there saying, can I have a deal? Because your answer's going to be yes.
How would you negotiate with me about a price? Anyone? Or was
there... I'm not very good at negotiating the price. I'm actually someone who's willing to spend if I'm having a good time. But I'm lost very easily if someone... Yeah, I'm lost very easily. I bounce very quickly when it doesn't feel right. So it can be, I wouldn't know what the reason would be in a bike shop, because I probably know a lot more going into a bike shop than I do when I'm going into a buy a van or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not necessarily good at making a deal. I think I'm the sort of person that you probably get away with making some money on, because I'm having I'll be like, if I'm having a good time, I'm like, yeah, I don't really want to talk about, it would ruin my time if you said to me, if I felt I needed to start haggling or something, I'd just be like, I ain't in it to haggle, I'm in it to get the thing I want, and I want this bit to be as much fun as so I'm for the experience.
No, that's cool.
I'm probably not.
I think I'm the same.
I'm probably not tip, oh yeah, maybe I don't
like, know. I'll use cameras as an example here. By the time I go to the shop to buy it, I've already bought it.
Yeah, I'm in.
And I've read all the reviews and watched all the videos and all the specs and compared it to everything else in the market. And I know I can get it cheaper in a number of places. But when I go in, I want to feel it. I want to put it on my camera. I want to try it make sure it's the one.
And I don't want to feel
rushed.
And if
the person in there
is that
person you're talking about that can almost talk me out of it, I'm obviously just going to walk out.
Yeah.
Whereas if that person's on board with what I want, I quite often have to buy it on the spot.
Yeah, yeah.
You're totally right, but the one thing, and I'm going to say it out loud, and I've said this to customers, the customer isn't always right.
For sure.
No,
yeah.
That's true.
But it's how you navigate that conversation.
Yeah.
And, definitely.
Mm.
I think coming to the price thing, you know, if you came in and you didn't... The people who don't absolutely try and nail us to the cross end up getting more anyway.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Top blow that guy was. Let's just make it tubeless for him.
Yeah. That's the sort of thing. That's what you want.
That's really cool.
That's
by the way, we made it tubeless for you. Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I feel like that's how you get to enjoy it the most if you go into something with the, yeah, knowing what it's worth, not trying to find the very cheapest version of it, because it will cost you in another way.
Yeah,
that won't be palatable for me. I just won't be able to have it. I've got a builder, Clive, his name is, who's working on stuff on my house now and again, just at the moment. And he's one of those guys that he doesn't want to do something for no reason. I come up with tons of stupid ideas. I'm like, when you finish doing this, he's just put a lovely patio down on the front of my house. I'm like, when you've done this, I was thinking we do the loft, you know, go crazy. He's like, you don't need a loft conversion. And I'm like, no, but it would be really cool, because what I was imagining is I could have a round window and I'd start going off on my little imagination process that's got me there.
What would you put?
And he's just like, what? I'm not building you a loft conversion.
But that's trust.
Yeah, so he's like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, he's like, how are you going to get up there? And I'm like, oh, I was thinking I have a through floor lift. He's like, they break down all the time. And he won't, you can't make him do something that's a bad idea. But like you say, that's it's cool. Like, I know I can say, if I say to him, because I've already thought of the next thing I'm going to do, he'll be like, yeah. And I'll be like, oh, okay, this is on then. And then I start to enjoy myself, you know, I can, because, you know, you're spending a lot of money in those things and it needs to be kind of good fun.
Yeah.
I've got to say, the whole retail thing, I feel it's a little bit broken.
Mm.
I feel like there's a lot of people working in retail that are just working there to get paid. They're not working. And I kind of understand that, but I've always had the sort of mantra of, like, no matter what you do, just be good at it.
Mm.
Be good at it, be proud.
I'm like, really lucky I've got...
And it'll make your job easier because you'll be getting something out of it.
Mm. Fantastic staff that I would want to buy from, all of them, you know, Matt, Corinna, Rich... Mm. Chris, Rex, Sam, our apprentice, he's awesome. Like, I'm going to big them all up. And I think I said it in a previous chat we've had is, you know, I might have come up with the name of the shop and put the logo up, but it's them that is the shop. Mm. And I think that's the case in so many other bike shops. I've got lots of friends who have bike shops and they're all awesome. And I want to go and buy stuff. I'm gutted I can't go and buy stuff from their shops.
Yeah.
It's the bike shop is it's a magical place.
Oh, it is. I've spent so much time in bike shops just chatting, usually talking to the guys in the workshop and pulling brake levers for no reason.
Oh, you're that one.
Pressing levers. And if I'm in a motorbike shop, I'm, just slightly turning the throttle, but not taking the piss, but I'm moving it. And I'm just chatting away and... They're just some of the best chats I've ever had. You know, they're just so...
I think some deep. Customers over the years have come in the bike shop like it's a therapy session. I'm like,
yeah.
I know some stuff about some people. But that's cool. Come on in.
The bike... So where are we at? Bike industry's broken or not broken? I mean, we'll start to wrap it up.
Temporarily.
It's temporarily not in good shape.
We're going to be all good. If every newspaper put one positive story on the front cover, that was like a rule, we'd just be a happier world.
Yeah.
I think that's
true.
I think we just need to just keep moving, look after each other within the industry.
Mm.
You know, you guys are in the industry. You're part of the puzzle. Let's just all help each other. Let's get through it. Let's support the right brands, the brands that support you. I'm going to be sticking with my brands now. Like, they have had my back. One or two, particularly at the minute, are going above and beyond to support me. And I just want to say thank you. I think we just need to help each other. And I'll do my bit. I'll help the customers.
Mm.
I'll try and help the suppliers.
Now, shout out to those folks. What brands are we talking? Let's tag them, because
are we going
to
do that?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, because the customer.
Why not?
Give
them some love.
The viewers want to know what brands
there'll
are.
There'll be other
brands.
Independents that stock the same brands that might be getting the same support. So why
not? I want to big up Santa Cruz and John T in particular, who works there, who's been really supportive and helping me navigate through orders and bills and stuff. Really cool. Dan White at Cube, absolute.
Oh, he's a legend. Legend.
And I tell you what. You know, these are all people that, you know, I'd want to either come to my wedding or funeral.
Mm.
You know, they're all top jockeys. You know, everyone, Richie at Mondraker, Scott at White, every brand we do.
Good old Richie.
Is that they've literally got our back and been, they're not pushing the bikes on us. Mm. It's getting a bit more, it's not getting aggressive now, but 2023, there's some guidelines getting laid out by all of these brands. Mm. And I mean, you know, you cancel a bike and there's going to be consequences. Mm. They're not threatening, but they're like saying, this can't continue. We need, this is what we're going to put in place as a circuit breaker. We need you to stick to these guidelines. Mm. But yeah, and another one is big shout out to Marin, Tom Wilden, John Oldell, absolute legends. And again, they've all had our back, whether that's a phone call, how you doing? Everything all right? Anything we can do? By the way, can you pay a bill? Of course I can.
I love this industry. It's full of really great people.
It is good people. And I, more than anyone, I'm just trying to just remember that we're dealing with good people.
Mm. Yeah. So I guess you could say then, like kids going through good or bad patches and anything in life, it's a phase.
Yep.
Basically. Whether it's good or bad, it's a phase.
We'll get through the other side.
It's gonna change.
Yeah.
And we'll get through it together.
Just, yeah.
I think communication is the main thing. Just keep chatting it through. I can already see some light at the end of the tunnel. You know, if we'd have done this podcast 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, would have been a different tone. I'm telling you, it would have been gnarly. Mm. Man, and already, we started to sell a few bikes. You know, it's easing up, paying a few bills, carrying on.
Yeah, well, long may the up-ramp continue. And I guess we'll try and summarise all this in a dirt shed if you've been listening to this from that. Hopefully we manage
it. That'll be like this in 3 minutes.
We're going to try and do what we just did in 6 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Tops.
Bang, bang, bang.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.